We began our study of Nehemiah last week by saying that we ourselves face something that is in desperate need of being rebuilt. That is the strong family structure founded in Christ, which is indeed the basis of our society. And much like Nehemiah was dismayed by the decay of his homeland, so we should be concerned over the potential for ruin in our family structures and relationships. And as we said last week, that is not to say we just step back and say, oh, everything's just falling apart, there's no hope for our society, not at all. It is to be, as Nehemiah was, concerned about the building that needs to be done. We discover that the work of building can be done if we are intentional about it. And that intentionality first requires a passion for what it is that we have been called to do. We said all of that last week. Our passion for building first and foremost is required if we are going to be intentional builders. Passion is really the first thing that we must have. We must see what needs to be done. We must see the potential for good in our relationships, in our families, in our marriages, in all of these areas of life. And then we must desire to build. Well, today is Father's Day, and in keeping with our study of intentionally building in our families and relationships, we're going to learn today that it is not only passion that you need, it is also purpose. It's not only passion. Passion will only take you so far. Let me give you an example. There are certain things in life that I am passionate about. My favorite sport, as most many of you know, is baseball. It's my favorite sport. Played it for many, many years. I've been coaching it now since the kids started playing. Love baseball. Passionate about it. Pursued it hours and hours and hours of my life. Days and days and days. Months and months and months of my life dedicated to learning and playing baseball. And I was intentional about my pursuit of it, but passion would only take me so far. See, my passion for baseball only gives me enough qualification to sit on the couch with a bag of chips and a Coke in one hand and scream at the TV. That's about all that passion will get me for baseball. If you're actually going to do something about wanting to play a sport that you're passionate about, it has to go a little bit beyond that, doesn't it? You have to be somewhat purposeful in attacking it. So let me begin this morning, since we're talking about fathers and Father's Day, and we're talking about building our family relationships. Let me ask all of you parents, particularly fathers, but all of you parents, a question. Do you ever feel like, as a parent or even a grandparent, that you suffer from multiple personality disorder? Now, I'm not making fun of the actual disease. It's a real disease. But there are times when I think I must have more than one of me existing here. Let me give you a few examples. The first of my personalities as a father, I would label the Say Hey Dad. Now, some of you may know that Willie Mays was called the Say Hey Kid. He played for San Francisco, played baseball. Some of you may know that, okay? The Say Hey Kid. I call myself the Say Hey Dad because there are certain days where all I say is the word hey, all day long. I start out my morning with, hey, it's time to go to school. Hey, why are you still in bed? Hey, why haven't you brushed your teeth yet? My day begins with the word hey, usually followed by an explanation. By the time the day is halfway over, I've ditched the explanation. And all I'm doing to my kids is going, hey, hey, hey. And if I get really good, it's usually followed with stop that. And that's all I do all day. Because you would think that children should know certain things by the time that they're five-ish. But I still find myself going, and then that's sometimes followed by a, there's not even a phrase, it's just sort of a confused, like, what are you doing? So that's my first personality as father. It's just, hey, stop. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, leave me alone. That's one of my personalities. It's just what you face. Then there's the young, energetic, sort of goofy, come what may personality of fatherhood, which really I ask the question, why not? You know? And so you feel like you just start playing with the kids, you do goofy things with them, and you kind of let them get away with a few things, but you just goof off, you roll around on the carpet together, and you play, and you fight, and you tickle, and you go outside, and you get in a fight with the hose, and it's just the fun dad, okay? Here's the problem. Fun dad has about this much energy. There's something about children that when fun dad infuses them with the little bit of energy that he has, it exponentially increases the amount of energy that they have to continue playing the game. And then I revert to the hey dad, which is like, hey, I've had enough. You'll have to go play by yourselves now. I'm out of energy. So that's another one of my personalities as a father. A third one of my personalities is coaching dad, and I've just gotten into this mode in the last couple years. Coaching dad has basically one concern in mind. Do it right. Do it the way it's supposed to be done, which means when we hit the ball, we don't run to third base. That's something we're learning. We run to first base, and we don't take the bat with us. We drop the bat, and we run. And a particular eventful one that I'm having with my T-ballers, including my son right now, is when Coach Wes is putting the tee ball on the tee is not the time for you to be swinging the bat in the batter's box. I've perfected this move, and if you've coached tee ball, you know what I mean. I perfected this move right here. Just the half step back, or you're about to get it. But I love my kids, but when you're coaching them, you feel like you don't want to give them special consideration, and sometimes you're even a little tougher on them, and you just want them to get it right because you want them to learn. And that everything's driven towards that. Then there's tired dad. Tired dad only knows one sentence. I don't care. I don't care. Just go ahead. Go ahead. Dad, can we wash the car? I don't know what that means exactly, but if I'm going to get up and go find out what it means, it's probably going to take more effort than just cleaning it up when they're done. So I don't care. Go ahead. Stay outside of the car if you're going to wash it. Don't get in it. But whatever. Then there's serious dad, which usually starts his sentences off with, we need to talk. Which, by the way, and I don't want to embarrass my daughter, that sentence scares her to death. And she's only 8 years old, but it scares her to death. When I say, I want to talk to you, she immediately starts thinking of all the things that she's done wrong. Which what I have learned is if I will just say, we need to talk, and then keep my mouth shut and listen for a few minutes, I will find out a lot of things I did not know that she had done wrong. But even if it's something positive, I'll often say, you know, I want to talk to you. And we'll try to find some time where we can just be alone and we can sit and we can talk. Then there's compassionate dad. You know, give me a hug. I love you. I just want you to know I love you. I care about you. Then there's wise dad. The dad of infinite wisdom. Did you know, dads, by the way, that you possess infinite wisdom? You didn't know that? Let me tell you what it's like. This is infinite wisdom, Dad. It sounds like this. Go ask your mom. Infinite wisdom. Go ask your mother. Can't go wrong with that one. But then there are those moments as dads where your heart is weighed down with the seriousness of what it means to be a father. Just a couple days ago, Matthew had done something, and I don't even know what it was at this point. He had done something that I was a little bit frustrated by and had expressed my frustration with him, and Carrie was trying to explain it to him. And I found him in his room just sobbing. And when I asked him why he was sobbing, Matthew's by far our most sensitive kid, by the way. He's just very sensitive. When I asked him why he was crying, he said, Mommy said that you don't like me. Which she had, and I'd been standing right there in the conversation. I said, Matthew, that's not true. It's not true that she said it. No, I said, Matthew, I said, that's not true. I love you. I like you very much. I enjoy being your dad. But he thought that's what he had heard, and he had misinterpreted it, being frustrated with for not liking, as kids will often do. And sometimes as we adults do as well. And in that moment, it just struck me the seriousness of the job that I have, that us as parents have, that I can turn on and off my son's perspective of himself or my daughter's perspective on themselves by what they think I think about them. Now, all of these different personalities, some of them are somewhat humorous, but all these different personalities sometimes make us a bit overwhelmed. And how do we parent? How do we build our families? Sometimes we feel like our heads are spinning. And many times we deal with issues in our parenting and our marriages and other aspects of relationships in our lives as they get thrown to us. So something happens, something springs up, there's some crisis, there's some problem. And whatever personality we happen to be in at that given moment, that's the response that they get. So when I'm on the ball as a dad, when I'm really doing my job, I'm going to respond differently than when I'm acting in tired dad mode. But often in our relationships, that's how, whether it's dating relationships, marriage relationships, family, parenting, whatever the case may be, we often respond with whatever personality we happen to be in that moment. Because we are sort of a product of whatever our day has brought to us. But I want to look at one little verse that's squeezed into Nehemiah chapter 5 and talk a little bit about building with purpose. It is not enough for you to be passionate about your relationships. You must be purposeful. Nehemiah chapter 5 verse 16. Nehemiah is speaking and telling about his interaction with the people that he is leading. And he says this, I also applied myself to the work on this wall. We did not buy any land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. Let me give you a little background on this verse. Nehemiah is governing the people there in Jerusalem. He's leading them. He's overseeing them. And most of chapter 5 is Nehemiah talking about all of the ways in which the governmental structure of that culture and that society had been abused. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. But he's talking about all the ways in which it had been abused and all the ways in which the governors and leaders before him had sort of dropped the ball. And now he is talking about his leadership. And in doing so, he talks about all of the things that he could have done that he didn't do. He talks a lot about not taking advantage of the governor's surplus of food. In other words, he was allowed to have a certain amount of food just for himself, just because of his position, but he didn't take advantage of that. He was allowed to, you know, levy certain taxes against people, and he didn't. He was allowed, he says, we didn't buy any land. He could have been going out and building up his own wealth. He was in a position of authority. And a lot of times when people get in positions of authority, what do? They sort of start to see how they can build up their own little nest egg. How they can build up their own wealth. He wasn't out buying land, he says, and his servants who worked for him that he could have had going out and doing all of the menial tasks that he didn't want to do, he didn't have them doing that either. His servants, the only job he gave them to do was go to where the building is and get to work on building. Instead of sending them out to buy land and sell goods and buy things and make his house beautiful and take care of his every whim, he says to them, I just want you to go to where the work is being done and I want you to build. Instead of himself going out and sort of mingling with all of the other, you know, powers that be and sort of making himself look good and sort of walking around and just supervising and wanting everyone to notice that he was in control and he was the one in authority. Instead of doing any of that, he says, I have dedicated myself to the work that is being done on this wall. The reason that verse is so important is because Nehemiah could have spent his time doing any number of other things, and it would have been considered acceptable. He was in a position of authority. I mean, he's the one that got the king, the Persian king, to let him go, and he comes bearing letters from the king in a position of authority, sort of a representative of the king, Artaxerxes. He could have just stood back and said, look, I'm in charge here. But his passion was about building, not about being in charge. And so because his passion was about building or rebuilding, then his purpose became, I'm going to be where the work is being done. So there were lots of things he could have been doing, lots of things he could have taken advantage of, a lot of different personalities he could have adopted, if you will. But he didn't. Instead, everything was focused on the purpose, which was building the wall. So what does it mean to build with purpose? Let me give you a few things that I think we see from Nehemiah that definitely apply to building in our relations. First of all, it means more than passion. It means plans. Building with purpose means more than passion. It means plans. We have to be people who think about what it takes to produce the kind of relationships and the kind of family situations and the kind of society that we actually want or that we believe would be beneficial. Nehemiah, before he ever left to go back to Jerusalem, he was already planning about what it would take to build. You see, if he had gone all the way back to Jerusalem and he had said, you know what we need? We need wood to build these walls. You know where we could get that wood? From the king's forest. Oh, wait a minute, we don't have permission to get wood from the king's forest. He'd have been stuck, wouldn't he? But he was a planner. He thought about it before he ever left to go back to Jerusalem, and he said to the king, will you give me a letter so that when I get back to Jerusalem, I will have the authority that I need to go into your forest and be able to take the wood that I need in order to do the building. So it's more than just passion, it's planning. What does that mean in your relationships, in your family life? That means that we have to be thinking about the decisions that we are going to have to make before we get to the place where we have to make them. Now, before you say, well, that's not always possible, I know that's not always possible, okay? Sometimes you get thrown a decision that you have to make or something comes up and you have to make it in the moment. But there are certain things with parenting, there are certain decisions in your marriage, there are certain times in your life where you know that there are going to be important decisions to be made, or there are going to be important stances that you have to take. And I believe that one of the things that leads to many of those decisions being made poorly is because they were never prepared for. So building with purpose requires planning. But it gets more than that. It requires looking at the end product and backtracking to the individual decisions, not the other way around. And so, let's use marriage for an example. We're talking about building relationships. Let's use marriage for an example. When we enter into marriage, most of the time, we think we know what marriage is going to be like because we know what it looks like at the beginning. We're young and in love and blind. Sometimes we can't taste very well. All these things at the beginning. And it's great. And we say, this is what marriage is going to be like for the first week or two, or the first year or two. And often, and we talk about this, and when we do premarital counseling, it is not the beginning that is going to set the ending. Rather, it is the ending that should be setting the things that we're doing in the beginning. You understand the difference? It's like at school. I could walk into any classroom in the United States and teach any group of children anything. But it may not be what they need to learn. See, I've not been trained to educate them on the things they need to learn. I can only teach them about stuff that I want them to learn, which is not going to help them out very much. In education, has shifted somewhat to look at the things that we say we know these are the things that we believe they need to exit with. So we are going to backtrack into our instruction and begin formulating our instruction for the things that we want them to know at the end. Now, some people call that teaching to the test. But I think that if you make your test about the things you know are important, and then you teach to the test, you'll have taught the things that are important. Sometimes it's just that the tests are all messed up. I'm going to get into school board member here in a second. You don't want that personality. Let me tell you a little something about state testing. No, don't let me tell you something about state testing. Where were we at? My point is this. It is the things that you believe should be the outcomes that should be determining the decisions of your relationships. You want your family structure to be centered on Christ? Then you should be backtracking decisions into your daily life that help pull your family in the direction of Christ. Not just hoping that if we're really good Christian people and show up to church most Sundays, that somehow that's going to make it happen. You with me? You want your marriage to be strong? You want to be faithful in your marriage? Don't wait until the stormy days come and then decide how you're going to do it. Backtrack that conclusion of a strong, united marriage into the daily decisions you make about your spouse. Third, it means not getting sidetracked with the trivial. Nehemiah says, I could be out buying land. I could be out building my wealth. I could have my servants, you know, mopping the floors and washing the walls so that my house looks really, really great. But that's trivial stuff. That's not what matters. Building with purpose means we don't get sidetracked by trivial things. Now you say, well, in our culture today, what are trivial things? The best way I can answer that question is to say most things could be trivial things if they are taken and put in the wrong context. I believe in getting involved in social opportunities and in extracurricular activities for kids and giving them opportunities to grow, and I think it teaches them many great things. But sports, school clubs, your activities as an adult, the social groups that you're involved with, all of those things can become trivial if you allow them to rule the rest of your life. The number of times that I have heard someone say, I know I would like to do this for my family or do this with my family or go and put an emphasis here or invest my time there, but I can't because, and then the thing that they give as a because is trivial. It's not that important. It seems important in the moment. It's not important in the grand scheme of things. And I fail at this. I mean, my kids aren't very old, but I think of the things that sometimes I allow them to do or the ways that I allow them to spend their time just because it might be easier or more convenient. And there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not the most important thing. And so as a parent or as a husband or a wife or a grandparent, what you want to do is make sure that the trivial things are not becoming the only thing. But trivial things have a way of becoming the only thing. If Nehemiah had allowed himself to get caught up in his own status, I think there would have come a point where he would have quit building altogether. Because he'd have been so concerned about what he had for himself. So I am not saying that less significant things have no place in our lives. I'm just saying be careful. They will overrun your life if you let them. Anything can become a trivial thing if it begins to pull away from your intentionality to invite Christ to be the core center of everything that you do in your relationships. Now, this is not a sermon about shame on us. All I'm saying is, again, if we're concerned about the end product, we want to make sure that things are not sidetracking us back here. But as we said at the beginning of the message, or at the beginning of the service today, we're talking about God's love for us. Aren't you glad that God doesn't sit back and go, you know, you wasted this whole week on stuff that didn't matter. I guess you're going to have to try twice as hard next week. Aren't you glad he doesn't do that? Because we don't do that with our kids. You messed up. Own it. Let's move forward. Right? Let's learn from our mistakes. You don't say to your kid, like, you disobeyed. That means I'm going to give you twice as many things to have to obey next week. We're going to see if you can take the extra load. No. You just say, let's learn from your mistake. Let's adjust. Let's do a course adjustment here, and let's get back on the direction we need to go. God's not standing up in heaven going, oh, you really blew it. You messed up. Well, I guess I'm just going to have to throw another load of weight upon you and see if you can buckle down and really get back in shape here. He says, I love you. Let's do a course adjustment. Let's get back where we need to be. Finally, building with purpose means placing emphasis on the value of the whole, not the individual. You remember last week how we said that there were all these different guys that were building the wall right next to each other? Like one guy and his family were building here, and then the next guy whose name we can't pronounce was building here, and then someone else with a strange name was building over here. If you read the first four or five chapters of Nehemiah, you know what I'm talking about? They're all building next to each other. Each one of them was building, but they were each building with something in mind. It was the whole wall, right? How good would it have been for Nehemiah to be like, okay, Abinadab, I don't know if his name was Abinadab, but I can pronounce that one, so let's call it that. Abinadab, you're gonna build this 10-foot section of wall right here. Now, nobody's going to build on either side of you, but that 10-foot section of wall, we want to make sure that it's nice and strong. What would be the point? You see, Abinadab's building only helps if it's part of a whole. You with me? Your building and your family and your relationships, your parenting, your siblings, your marriage, your work relationships, all these things that form the basis for a strong and secure culture and spiritual life. Do not just depend on your building your own little kingdom. You need the people who are sitting around you. Now that might make us a little nervous. Do you see the people who are sitting around me? I need these people? Yes! But they're imperfect. Yes! And so are you. And their section of wall is not going to be without deficiency, and neither is yours. But I can tell you this, you give me two sections of wall that both have deficiencies, and I'll take it over one section of wall that is perfect. Why? Because now we're interlocking and we're building something stronger. And eventually that wall that they were building went the entire way around the city. Why? Because everybody did his job in being part of the whole. So building with purpose means that you recognize that your part of building is not just significant for you, it is also significant for the family sitting next to you and for the people sitting behind you and the people who live across the street and the people that you work with. Do you understand? That what you do in your building is not just for your family, it's not just for your kids, it's not just for your marriage, it is for the good of the whole. And when we start to see building in that context, we start to see church life differently, we start to see our neighborhoods differently, we start to see our workplace differently, we see our children's friends differently, because our building now becomes good for the whole. But that is building on purpose. Now let me flip that around the other way before we wrap it up for today. That also means that when you're at your weakest point, when you're struggling, you have been given a gift of other people who are also building on your behalf. When one family is building a section of the wall here, and Nehemiah puts another family building the section of the wall here, and another family over here, if this family here runs out of supplies or goods or needs to take a break or someone gets sick, this family over here knows we are working on the same wall. This might be their section, but we're working on the same wall, so I want to do everything I can to help this other neighbor of mine who's also building, because if he can't build his section, my section is weakened. So when you are at your lowest point, when you are convinced that everything that you've tried, whether it's in parenting or in marriage or at work, or whether you're dealing with maybe your parents as they get older, whatever the case may be, and you feel like you have tried everything, God has put you in a context where you are building with other people, and when you are weak, they make you stronger. It's called being in community. Now, why do I bring that up? Well, I want to give you encouragement with it, but the other thing, the reason I bring it up is because we have one little problem that keeps us from benefiting from the other people who are building around us. Do you know what it is? Our pride. We don't want other people to think that we're dysfunctional. Right? I got news for you. We're all dysfunctional. Isn't that great? Can't you just breathe a sigh of relief and thank goodness? Everybody's got issues. Everybody's got problems. Everybody's trying to work through their own stuff. So that when we learn that the other people around us are also struggling to build sometimes, we can actually help each other. Why? Because we're building for the whole. So it's okay that sometimes we struggle. God's not giving up on the project, and neither should we. So be intentional in your purpose. Go beyond passion. Passion will take you so far. And last week we said passion's really important, but can I tell you something? Passion without purpose is a very dangerous thing. Being passionate and having no structure, no discipline, no purpose is very dangerous. Having lots of go-get-em and no structure in which to put it can do more harm than good. There is no substitute in dating, in marriage, in parenting, etc. There is no substitute for thinking through before you get to the point of crisis, if at all possible. And you can. You know, Nehemiah wasn't unique. Nehemiah wasn't the only person in the world who could do this. He was just the person who happened to do it. He was passionate and purposeful, and you can be as well. I'm going to ask Pete to come back to the platform to lead us in a closing hymn. And it's a really familiar hymn, and it's one we sing a lot, no doubt. But I thought it was a good one to close with. The Solid Rock. You know, when you're building on something, those of you who are builders, you know this even better than I do. When you're building on something, you basically need two things. You need a level surface to work on, and it's really helpful if that surface is solid, like concrete, right? Well, what you're building in your families and so forth is built on something solid and level. And it is Christ, the solid rock. You may feel like sometimes you don't know where to turn. My friends, He is there. And He is holding you up and He is supporting you. Let's stand together as we sing this song as sort of our response to realizing that God is working in us as we build in our relationships.